two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Time to take KSL Outdoors. This is Utah's most listened to program about hunting, fishing, camping, and high adventure. All the gear you need to buy, where the fish are biting, and secret places in Utah and around the world where you can have a blast. KSL Outdoors with host Tim Hughes on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Our thanks to ABC News. Just a reminder that should there be any new breaking information out of Washington on the heels of this impeachment trial situation, we'll have it for you when it happens here on KSL, along with your local and regional news. Hour number two and the final one for another week of KSL Outdoors Radio. Tim Hughes, along with Russ Smith from Sky Call.
Good morning.
I didn't ask you at the top of the last hour because we sort of derailed quickly.
Yeah, we got into something.
About what you've been up to this week. Business for you is slow this time,
yeah,
of year,
really
right?
Slow. Actually, it's not a bad thing. I mean, yeah, I'd rather be busy, but it gives us a chance to goof off and travel a little bit. And we're starting to plan next year's. We're going to take January, February off. Now, I say that we won't be there, but we will have someone there.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like we're going to leave you hanging. But it's quiet enough where I could probably have the dogs hand out phones, you know.
I'm always surprised that this time of year is slow for sat phones because to me, when I take my family out snowmobiling, I enjoy the activity, but right. I'm always fearful. If something goes bad this time of year, there are a lot of penalty points with cold weather and being lost in the snow and having what you need in the backcountry.
You know I've tried.
I know.
Snowmobilers, and I'm going to offend a few, but too bad, feel like they're invincible. I question them. I ask everybody, are you snowmobile? You know, come back and get a phone. No, we can get cell service. I said, okay, how do you do that? He said, well, you know, if we break down, somebody will hike up to the top of the mountain.
In the
snow. I said, okay, so has that ever happened? No. I said, do you carry snowshoes? No. Have you ever tried to hike in 6 feet of powder? You know, it just doesn't happen.
No,
exactly.
And it might be more than 6 feet when you get up to the top.
These guys, I mean, I've gone over that over and over about avalanche and everything. You need communications. You need to get medevac in immediately.
Yeah, time is of the essence for a lot of reasons, and particularly if you get yourself caught in an avalanche situation.
I think that's kind of consistent. I find that with snowmobilers, like you say.
Oh, it is. It is. When I first started the business, I pitched snowmobilers big time. I finally gave up. And I like to snowmobile, and they're usually a great crowd, and they usually travel in groups. There's a few lone wolves out there, but
kind of reckless.
And they go fast, and they break machines, they center punch trees. I've been there.
No, I get it.
Hey,
I think
broken limbs.
There's
you know.
A mindset with that.
You want to see? You want to see what goes on?
Oh,
follow Roger Egan at Bear River Lodge, and just see some of the challenges
the
he's had
stuff.
This year. Yeah, especially if it's a running machine. Anyway, I mentioned that only because I know it's a good time to get a phone because you're not
perfect
that busy,
time,
and
yeah.
I would think people should reach out to you if they need
Thank
to
you.
At skycallsatellite.com
and 801-450-8317.
Yeah.
Get your reservations in early.
Yeah, Navinovskis is also here with us today. And I just want to remind everybody coming up, we'll look forward to talking with Brian Brown at Snowbird in our Snow Day segment. We'll get an avalanche update, speaking of being out there in the backcountry with Craig Gordon and We also look forward to talking with our buddy Billy Fenimore in the next little bit. I want to get Jace Taylor in here. He is a bighorn sheep biologist with the Division of Wildlife Resources who's going to spend a few minutes with us here because there's an effort to reintroduce bighorn sheep to Antelope Island today, a place that's close to our heart. We used to have some fun out there with the annual balloon festival and things. Jace, thanks for your time today.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Tell us about the timing of this. Has it already happened?
Yeah. No, this has already happened. So we brought 25 Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep from Montana. It's Rocky Boys Native American Reservation in Montana. Caught them on Tuesday, drove them down, had test results showing us that the animals were healthy and ready to be released, and we released them yesterday afternoon.
Oh, yesterday afternoon. Wow. So did it go as planned?
It went really well. The animals were healthy. Like I said, they tested really well, had all the signals that we wanted. And then they came out of the trailer and ran up on the mountain looking chipper. So
nice.
We were
nice.
Really happy. And there were a lot of people that came, and we're glad that they were able to come. Hope they enjoyed watching those animals be reintroduced. They went really well.
As Antelope Island turned into the laboratory for fishing game, seems like we're always doing something up there, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't know about laboratory, but for bighorn sheep, it is definitely a special place for us. We've used it as what we would call a nursery herd, meaning that bighorns do really well on Antelope Island. It has great terrain, great habitat for them. And as the island starts to exceed what we want to have on the island, we take the surplus animals and move them to other places
Perfect.
In the state.
Yeah.
And so it's been great to us that way. We've moved from the past herd almost 250 animals off of there to start three other herds in the state, and we now have probably 600. We have more than 600 bighorns in the state because of Antelope Island.
Nice.
So it's a special place for us, for sure.
Yeah, talk for a minute about the history of this, because bighorn sheep out there go all the way back to the early 1900s, don't they?
Yeah, well, even before that. Before European settlement, bighorn sheep were prevalent in the state. Probably at the time that Europeans started settling the state, maybe the most abundant big game animal that we had in the state, more than deer or elk. Those numbers dwindled, and then it got to the point where we had very few in the state at all. And so there's been a lot of efforts to do reintroductions like this, finding suitable places, and we've built the population back up. So we're really happy.
You did it once, I know, in 1997, and the number I'm looking at was 29 bighorn sheep were released, and those 29 really did well out there and grew to a herd of almost 250.
So specifically for Antelope Island, like you said, records or signs, skeletal remains showing that bighorns were there historically, but were lost, and then reintroduced in 1997, like you said, 29 animals, did really well. And then we unfortunately lost them again about a year ago. But, yeah, and then reintroduced them just like I said yesterday. So,
can you tell us what causes that loss, especially the last bunch? What was the problem?
Yeah, so the last herd on Antelope Island, unfortunately, we lost to respiratory disease. They struggle. It's something that they're susceptible to. No one's fault. They just
That's right.
didn't evolve with certain pathogens, and they struggle with it. So the last herd on Antelope Island got respiratory disease, and so they really struggled with it. And so in order to get back to having a new healthy herd, we needed to depopulate the ones that were there before and start over.
So this is new blood.
Yep.
That's awesome. And do we hunt off of Antelope Island? I don't think we do. Do we?
There's been minimal hunting, I want to say, starting in 2011.
Oh, okay.
There's been a couple of permits, but even more so, more important than the hunting has been that nursery herd aspect
right.
of it, providing
right.
animals for other places.
This may be a silly question, but I know it's a conversation that I've had with several people through the time. As our water situation has fluctuated, and in some years goes way down, people talk about, you know, the bison being able to walk right off of Antelope Island. Have you put some boundaries out there to make sure they stay where they're supposed to stay?
Yeah, so for bighorn, it's especially important because, like we talked about, their risk of respiratory disease, it's really a concern to have bighorns with the ability to leave the island and then go get and cause problems for the rest of the herd. And so, yeah, so with the low lake levels, Antelope Island State Park working great with us, great partners. And working with them, there was a wildlife fence built around the south end of the island and some of the mudflats there. And so hopefully that will help the bighorns from having the incentive to leave and then causing problems. So we're hopeful that that's a great thing going forward.
Are these all collared?
Yeah, the current animals that we released yesterday, all of them were collared, GPS collars that help us keep track of their movements.
What's the management goal out there?
125 is what we try to manage for out in Antelope Island. So that'll fluctuate above that, below that a little bit as we do transplants. But 125 is what we'd like that to be.
I know there were a lot of people involved with this. You mentioned that the relocation sheep actually came from Montana. I guess that's probably an exchange program that goes both ways.
So this one is really an interesting one. We do oftentimes do exchanges with other state agencies. This one, Rocky Boys Native American Reservation, is different in that we have a partner, it's actually Kuyu Apparel, so an outdoor clothing company, that very generous approached us, saying that they had connections to this Rocky Boys reservation, and there were excess animals they needed somewhere to take them to, looking for us, seeing if we had a location to take them to, and we did in Antelope Island. And so they partnered with us, worked on it, were incredibly generous. Kuyu and their customers paid for to purchase the animals from Rocky Boys Reservation, and then also paid for all the capture. So it was a unique partnership, and you know what they get in return is they get to be a part of conservation. And so this was one that we're really grateful for that came at very little cost to Utah,
wow,
and our Division of Wildlife. So we're really happy with that.
And is there any understanding at all about their history in regards to immunities to the pathogen, like the respiratory problem? And how did those original group, the ones we just lost, contract that disease? Does it exist on its own on the island? It seems that it would have to be some sort of an infection. And would these new ones have the ability to thwart that disease based on their history?
Yeah, good question. So prior to bringing these bighorns to Antelope Island, we worked closely with our Department of Ag and other folks, other partners, and we tested the bison, a subset of the bison, deer, and the pronghorn on Antelope Island for the pathogens that we were most concerned about. Didn't find it in those animals, so we felt that they aren't carrying it. We'll probably never know for certain how exactly those pathogens got into the bighorn herd in the past. But we feel we have, some thoughts as to how it potentially could have happened. It probably doesn't do us any good to speculate on them, but we've taken measures that hopefully will prevent them from happening again in the future. Mm. And we feel that it doesn't exist on the island right now. And hopefully if we can prevent bighorns from leaving, then we can prevent those pathogens from being reintroduced on Antelope Island.
Yeah, and, I always set aside the hunting opportunities it might provide. It's just the wildlife viewing opportunities that it provides are first and foremost. And I'm sure since it's Antelope Island, you got to give shout-outs to the Utah State Parks and the Utah Wild Sheep Foundation. We're also a part of this, so a lot of helping hands along the way.
Absolutely. Conservation groups like Utah Wild Sheep Foundation, Sportsman Proficient Wildlife, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Utah Archery Association, Safari Club International. There's so many groups that, it's hard to list them all. And Department of Ag and, our Utah Wool Growers Association. State Parks, huge. There's just so many different partners that we have. It's such a huge collaborative effort. We're just really grateful for everybody and all the effort that went into it.
So, yeah.
So couldn't have been done without everybody.
When our listeners, the next time they go out to Antelope Island and get either spotted on a binocular or maybe get close enough they can get a good photo of them, think about this interview today and all the work that went into it. Jace, it's great for a chance to talk to you here. Thanks for your time.
No problem. Glad having being here. Appreciate
all right. Jace Taylor, bighorn sheep biologist with the Division of Wildlife Resources, our guest here to get this final hour of the show underway. Give us a break. We'll come back in a minute. And when we do, Billy Fenimore will be on with us. We'll talk about what's been happening up there at the Eccles Wildlife Education Center. I hope I got that right. That's coming up next. Stay with us.
I'm Dave Cawley. investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Still to come, of course, we'll have an avalanche update for you on a very warm weekend. I'm curious to find out from Craig Gordon at the Utah Avalanche Center what kinds of concerns that raises, even though we haven't had a ton of new snow in the last little while. There's more snow coming again on Monday, so we'll look forward to his report. Yeah. And then Brian Brown will join us for more of our Snow Day segment to talk about what's new at the Bird. As last time I looked, they were up over the century mark for snow totals. A couple of days ago, Russell, I got an email from Faith Jolly at the Division of Wildlife Resources that was titled, Five DWR Facilities That Offer Unique Experiences. Yeah. And in there was Hardware Ranch, which we talked about already.
Right.
Lee K. Public Shooting Range, which, you know, when they have events out there, we try and definitely familiarize people with. The Cache Valley Public Shooting Range also made that list. And then the Great Basin Research Center and Seed Warehouse, which I had no familiarity with at all.
I haven't ever heard of that.
But the Eccles Wildlife Education Center.
Yeah.
We know something about
we
this
do.
Place.
We do.
We know a guy.
We were there when they opened.
We were there when they opened. Billy Fenimore is with us, so it reminded us that we need to reach out and say, hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We haven't seen you in a little while, but give us an update on how things are going out there on Waterfowl Way.
Oh, it's going good. That reason I'm seeing me, we've visitation has increased in great numbers. A lot of folks are discovering us here in Farmington. A lot of our local residents are spreading the word and telling their friends and family about us. And it's just been an amazing time growing. We've have a lot of field trips going on now, getting ready for this time with our local elementary and grade schools. Mm-hmm. And high schools have been coming out. And our weekends are filled with a lot of our community engagement programs. We just had a wonderful wildlife workshop put on by a couple great folks, and that was well attended, close to about 75 folks. And we did a field trip up to Farmington Bay and learned a little bit more about how to use cameras. This Saturday will be a gull identification workshop to help folks with these confusing gull species that we have out at Farmington Bay. And we have a wonderful trail system. We have a couple miles of trails folks can enjoy to get out and walk. And when the air's a little bit not as smoggy and foggy, but it's been great being out here.
I think some people might be surprised that Nature Trail is actually getting used this time of year and that people are still visiting you, even in the dead of winter.
Oh, yes. No, definitely. You know, we have a lot of folks that take advantage of the Hassenjäger preserve and utilizing the trails because, you know, a lot of the wildlife is still out there using it. So a lot of waterfowl moving in. You know, it's been so mild, so our ponds are open. So a lot of waterfowl, geese are moving in. A lot of our songbirds are singing, getting ready, anticipating spring coming up. We have red fox on the trail. So it's just been a lot of fun having folks get out and exercise and getting out into nature.
There's another great opportunity that's coming up soon, and I can't think of a better place for this kind of a viewing day than out there in Farmington Bay, and that is the Eagle Day that's coming up always the first week of February, isn't it?
It is. So we'll have it that Saturday, February 8th. It's going to run from 9 to 2 in the morning. And it's mild, so we've had a number of birds out here. We counted about 30 just a few days ago, bald eagles. But just in case we don't have as many birds, I got some great friends from the Utah Falconers Association and Hawk Watch International that are going to bring live birds of prey that will be here on site. We'll have many, many raptors, a few owl species, and an eagle. here at the center from 9 to 2. We'll also have a couple presentations that we'll be giving on the bald eagle to talk a little bit more about their habitat and their likes and dislikes. And we'll have a craft, too, for the young folks to come on out and enjoy in our classroom.
Hey, Billy, why is this such a good time to see eagles? And tell me those times again. Did you say 9 to 2 a.m.?
9 to 2 p.m.
Oh, p.m. Okay.
Let's not do that.
What mystery is out there at the middle of the night? But what are we...
At 9 to 2 p.m., but it's a great time to see eagles during the daylight hours, just because when we get these winter freezes up north of us, these birds, the bald eagles, require open water for their prey. You know, they prey upon fish and waterfowl. So when things freeze up, real hard freeze up north, we'll get our birds coming down in latitude to our area. So they enjoy the Farmington Bay area, the Bear River area, just because some of the water stays, you know, open. They're not always completely frozen, so they can actively seek out carp. They can actively seek out waterfowl. So they enjoy it, and they'll spend the winter season with us and then get ready to migrate back up north for nesting and so forth.
Yeah. And, you know, it rolls off your tongue like it's no big deal. But you have to, when you say, yeah, we've seen like 30 birds or something, 30 bald eagles in one place. Some
cool.
people go a lifetime without seeing a bald eagle in the wild.
That's true, and we'll have our outreach folks, and we'll have spotting scopes available to everybody so they can get some good close-up
looks. Yeah. All right, we're out of time, but tell people again how they find you, and give us the update on the events for next Saturday, the 8th.
Jump onto wildlife.utah.gov. They'll be able to find out all about Eagle Day on the 8th, and we're at 1157 South Waterfowl Way in Farmington, and those hours are 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. And I look forward to seeing everybody and getting to meet a lot of friendly and new faces.
Russ will be out there at 2 a.m.
I'm just glad we're not spotlighting spotlighting eagles.
Okay.
All right. Your phone dropped out a little bit, so I want to make sure people know that web address again. It's wildlife.utah.gov, the same Division of Wildlife Resources site we give you all the time. Billy Fenimore, making his dad proud. Thanks so much for joining us again today.
Thank you for having me. Take care, both of you.
All right.
Thanks, Billy.
We'll take another break and come back with your Snow Day segment. Brian Brown will join us, but not before we get an avalanche update, an avalanche report from Craig Gordon at the Utah Avalanche Center. That's next.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.